The organization representing Illinois cities is pushing for legislation to consolidate hundreds of police and fire pension funds. The Illinois Municipal League says the change would save money and be less bureaucratic, pointing to the success of the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. That's the pension fund for city employees who are not cops or firefighters. GLT's Ryan Denham asks the president of Bloomington and Normal Police Pension Funds what they think of the idea. Mark Cotty is a retired Normal cop. Paul Swanland is a detective in Bloomington. Cotty says he doesn't want to lose local control.
I don't think it's a good idea at all, and for a lot of different reasons. It sounds good perhaps in theory, but in a practical nature, it creates some real issues. There's going to be a huge cost for all the funds to divest themselves. One study that was actually done for the Municipal League say that back in 2012, it'd be a $100 million cost just to liquidate funds and then for this consolidation. So that's one issue that I clearly have that causes a problem. And the other, you lose local control over funds. And I think that local municipalities, local boards have more of a feel about how they want to invest and how they want to put their monies and make those types of decisions. And it would disrupt the funds. It would take, I think one estimate I read was 11 years for this to even begin to break even. So on paper, it sounds good, but there's a practical nature to it, and it's very costly.
Paul, what do you think of this idea generally?
You know, back in 08 and 09 when we had that huge collapse and the stock market was doing terrible, everybody was losing money. And I think it took most funds on average about 7 or 8 years to recoup from that loss. So we're talking about something we're going to do to ourselves. You know, it's like a self-inflicted loss. It's going to take even longer nowadays, because that study that he's referencing was done in 2012. So that's in 2012's numbers and assets and everything, looking at it back then.
There are 653 police and fire pension funds outside of Chicago at this point. Each one has its own board, making decisions to protect and grow its assets, looking out for other members and retirees. So, Paul, you serve as president of the Bloomington Police Pension Board. So what does that board actually do? What is your charge?
So the board is made up, it's a five-member board. Two of the members are active officers who are elected by the active officers on the department. There's one retired officer who's elected by the retired officers from that department, and then two other people who are appointed by the mayor. The decisions that we're tasked with making are how the money's invested. That's a huge decision, and we get a lot of it. We have investment advisors that give us advice and give us direction of where we want to go for long-term sustainability and growth, and then answering questions that come up amongst active officers throughout their career, answering questions with retirees if they have issues or problems. The local boards are also responsible for disability hearings, sitting in on disability hearings if we have an officer that gets injured, either on or off duty, and is not able to work. We decide on that issue. And then just like day-to-day operations, paying bills. There's various bills that are associated with a fund, especially when you get to a fund that's larger in size, like Bloomington and Normal. You know, Bloomington has accountants that work to keep the book straight, and actuaries that work for us, making sure that we're following the statutes and the guidelines put out by the Illinois Department of Insurance.
For taxpayers, these police and fire pensions are a big deal. I mean, for their city portion of a person's property tax bill, it's about a third of it generally. Normal just raised taxes this year to cover police and fire pensions. So, Mark, can you talk about, you've been doing this a long time. You've been on your board for quite some time. Do you view this job as a pretty big responsibility, given what's at stake, not just for taxpayers, but for your members, your retirees?
Yes, I do. It is. It's a huge responsibility, and it's one that all the board members take very seriously. And we continually go to training, by the way. There is 16 hours mandated training, 32 hours initially when you come on, so you understand how to investment language, investment strategies, and everything else like that. So it is a huge responsibility. And as a board, you know, our task is very clear that we are fiduciaries of the money. So our main concern is the protection and growth of the fund, because the five-member board has exclusive control over that money, exclusive. And that's good, but it also creates a huge responsibility when we're, for all the millions of dollars that are in our fund. We're over a little over $30 million in our fund. Now, with that being said, and we try to balance that with knowing that whenever we make investment decisions, that we want to look at the very long term. We don't make risky investment decisions, and that's why we use an investment advisor. And that also we're very strategic. A couple members on our board, one is an attorney appointed by the mayor that works in finance, and the other is a retired person from Country Financial that ran their defined benefit plan. So we have the knowledge and the basis to do it, and we take it very seriously, knowing that the taxpayers are paying for this.
Well, Paul, can you talk about your experience getting trained up on this stuff? Presuming you didn't go to school for finance, you're a police officer with Bloomington. How does one become knowledgeable enough about finance and how pensions work to do this kind of job?
Yeah, the training is pretty intense. It, like Mark said, it was 32 hours, and it was taught by finance professionals, people that work in finance, people that work for large corporations, attorneys. And teaching you a little bit about some of the terms that you're going to hear when talking to your investment advisor and talking to the actuaries and just trying to understand the lingo, because every profession has their lingo. And so understanding the lingo is the biggest hurdle to get over. So once you understand what everybody's talking about, you can kind of work with them to make those smart decisions. But it was a lot. You're getting exposed to a lot that you don't have the background in.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm speaking with Paul Swanland, president of the Police Pension Fund for the City of Bloomington, and Mark Cotty, the president of Normal's Police Pension Board. We're talking about a proposal from the Illinois Municipal League to merge the state's hundreds of police and fire pension funds. Mark, you've said you have two major areas of concern. The first is that merging these pension systems would be costly because you'd have to divest your assets and build something new. What about that second area of concern, the loss of local control? Why is that concerning to you?
Well, local government, it just goes back to the philosophy, I believe, that I have anyway, that with local control and local government, you are closer to the people that are making the decisions. And there is a sort of a responsibility. You have that closer tie with the community. If you turn the money over to a state fund, you lose that ability. You lose the ability to handle it the way that you think it should be handled. Because really, it's the taxpayers' money from the town of Normal. It's not the state of Illinois' money. It's the town of Normal's money. And honestly, I just to be somewhat blunt, the state has not managed their money well. They have not. And I would be very nervous to turn over the $14 billion or so that we're talking about to the state, who the five funds that they have been mismanaged, to be quite frank, and they're woefully underfunded. And I don't want to see us fall into that position, because most municipalities are doing well. There's some that aren't, but that can be dealt with on an individual basis. One of the reasons I think they really want the consolidation is to say that they can make better investment decisions. You know, a huge fund can get better returns. But that's not always so. Our returns are fine. Our returns are doing very well. And if they want to help us with the returns, Ryan, what they could do is change the legislation, because they do not allow us to invest the same as a business would, or even as a huge organization like IMRF. We have to have our assets in certain asset classes. And if they were to free that up, we could actually get better returns. I know we could.
Let's unpack that. How are your investment decisions overly restricted right now, in your view?
The state says we can have 65% in equities, and then the remaining 35% have to be in fixed income. Mm-hmm. And fixed income are treasury bills, CDs, things that are guaranteed by basically the federal government. The problem with that is that you don't get returns on your fixed income. We haven't in the last 10, 12 years. So we do really well on the equity side. I mean, our equities, we're making a lot of money on our equities, But it brings us down overall because our fixed income, we're just not, when you're talking about only getting 1.5%, maybe 2% on your fixed income, that's just a drag on the fund.
Is that because interest rates have been just generally so low?
Exactly. So we could have rebalanced if they would. I mean, we're at 65%. I know Bloomington is at that limit too, or a little bit above it. But we're at that limit. So if we could go higher into equities, we could make more money. And then if the economy changes, then we can shift back to fixed income. But we're not allowed to shift like the private investor could, or even a large corporation, or IMRF. They shift back and forth by how things are going. We're locked in. And that, the 65-35 rule, is what's really hurting us right now.
Is the thinking that like allowing you to shift like that would be too risky, allowing you guys to get too much into equities? Is that sort of the thinking?
I don't know, but I assume that's probably what they're thinking, that we don't know what we're doing, and so they need to control us. But in actuality, no. You look up the makeup of our boards and our investment advisors. These are professionals that manage many funds. Some of the investment advisors we use have billions of dollars of assets they manage. They know what they're doing.
So I think supporters of this idea would probably come back and say, well, look, there's this example of the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, the IMRF, which is how municipalities handle retirements for non-uniformed staff members like the City of Bloomington's finance department or whatever. In looking at something like the IMRF, which already exists as sort of a precedent for this type of thing, what do you see in the IMRF that maybe that troubles you or is concerning to you enough that you think, well, if it worked like that, I don't think that's how it should work for these particular funds?
When you're talking about IMRF, you have to understand that IMRF, when it was created with the concept to cover all the municipalities. So that was its main purpose when it was created. We're not talking about transitioning from 600 and some pension funds into a consolidated fund. Now, the way that IMRF manages their money, I think, is great, and they do a great job. And the reason why they have better investments than probably anybody else is because the legislator lets them, which goes back to my point that they need to free up our ability to invest like that.
So another point that supporters of this concept may make is that you have all of these individual pension funds around the state, and they all have investment advisors, and they're paying fees to have experts come in and advise them on what decisions to make with their investments. And they would say that that's wasteful. You could consolidate that type of decision-making at a larger scale and save money on those types of fees. What do you think of that idea? Are pension funds like yours needlessly spending money on investment advisor fees?
Certainly, I would say that in theory, that if you put them all together and you had one investment advisor, you probably would save some money on fees. I wouldn't argue that point. But the fees that are going to our investment advisors are not that great. We bid it out. We are required to do so every 5 years. And so we pick our people based upon the expertise that they have, and also how much it's going to cost us for them to manage our money. So it's a competitive business. When we put out our requests for proposals every 5 years, the companies that are bidding for this, they know that we're looking for competency and we're looking for value. And so we actually get we get some really good deals from our investment advisors because they know that they have to, because it's a competitive market. And when you have competition in a free market like that, you're going to get the best person, best firm, based upon that competition that we're using. So, no, it's really not that expensive to hire someone to manage our money, actually.
Your pension funds are now about 52% funded. That's the value of your fund's assets divided by total liabilities. Your municipalities and you, you're legally obligated to get by 90% funded by the end of 2040. So how do you get from 52% to 90% in that span of time?
The way that the money comes into a pension fund, so that people understand that, comes through property taxes. Generally, cities can, if they want, they could have a sales tax that goes directly. They're not prohibited from that. But currently, the common way is property taxes, investment returns, and then the amount of money that the employees put into the fund. So to grow that, you're going to have either higher property taxes or better investments. we choose to look at trying to get better investments. And the way that we can do that, again, and I just don't want to harp on this, but free us up so that we can get better returns. We're beating the market. I know normal, we beat the market last year, meaning that we beat the S&P. We've always have, basically. But we could do much better if you let us free us up. Every investment advisor I've ever had says, you've got to change the statute. It handcuffs us. We could get better returns for you because you're not following what the model would be, the industry standard. What we're doing is not the industry standard because the state says we can't use that standard.
Generally, how good or bad a job have the cities of Bloomington and the town of Normal done in terms of making their contributions into the police and fire pensions?
They've done a really good job. I mean, there's no complaints, at least from where I sit. Bloomington has passed a similar ordinance to what Normal has about making sure that they want to be 100% funded by that 2041 versus 90% that the state's requiring. I have to commend the city council and the mayor and all the people in the local government that work to set that goal. It's a very lofty goal, but it's an important one. And they realize that they can't kick that can down the road to future council members, to future leaders, that they have to take responsibility for it now. It might hurt. It might be a lot of money now, but down the road, in the long run, their contributions will go down. It will be less money that they'll be required to put into the fund, and it will get better down the road.
That's Paul Swanland, president of the Bloomington Police Pension Fund, and Mark Cotty, president of the Normal Police Pension Fund. I'm Ryan Denham.
Republican State Senator Pamela Althoff has proposed 5 bills in Springfield that would achieve various degrees of pension fund consolidation. The plan is also backed by the nonpartisan Civic Federation.